Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's NOOM.com to sign up for your trial today.
Hey there. Welcome to Nick Pollock and Friends, where I talk to people I know and who you should know. Today, we're talking to Lauren Auerbach. Lauren, how you doing?
I am good, Nick. Thank you for having me on here. I'm excited to chat with you today.
Me too. I got to really know you at First Mitch Arizona. That's over a month ago now.
I know. It's crazy. Time flies.
Yeah. And it was, I gotta go know more about Lauren now. And for everybody listening, tell everybody where they can find you and everything that you do.
I am over at Fantrax, where I write baseball articles as well as football articles. And that's where you can find most of my work. And I'm at Twitter at LK Auerbach.
There you go. Yes. Only baseball articles.
I know. I lied about football. I don't really do football. Just
no, of course.
That.
Of course you do. So how I normally do this is we start all the way back at the beginning.
All the way back.
Which was, of course, just a month ago. Mm-hmm. As we were in the room for Eno's wonderful appearance on Sleeper in the Bust.
That was a good one.
And I think that's the only event that happened, actually, the entire time.
That was it. But I thought we weren't allowed to talk about that. Are we allowed to talk about that?
No. I mean, that's it. It was the best. If you weren't there, it's just one of those things that you should be at First Pitch Arizona.
I wholeheartedly agree that if you haven't been to First Pitch Arizona, this was my first time I went, and I had heard great things about it previously, and it lived up to all of that and more. I think it's just a really great venue to meet people in the industry as well as people who aren't in the industry, and just, you know, sit and talk baseball with them for a weekend. And they're great panels and the people are great, and it was fun.
You know, one of my favorite things that you did at First Pitch Arizona was you didn't go to the Home Run Derby. Instead, you watched the World Series.
That is right. We were, I think that was probably the last time that I saw you. And I did want to ask you if you've really fully recovered from that, because we were sitting next to each other. And I'm just, once Wheeler was pulled, I think that was the end of you for the evening.
I was so upset. I was so upset.
Yeah.
It's Blake Snell 2.0. And we're going to yell at the whole, we've been yelling at the Blake Snell thing for like 2 years.
Right.
No one's talking about this Wheeler one, and it's the same scenario. He had it.
It was there. It was so close, right? And then it was just, I don't know if it's like you get too cute or you overthink. I don't really know what happened there, but then everything went downhill. It went sideways from there.
I was depressed for like
You really were. Like that was it for you for that night. You were donezo. You know, and it was like that was the end of you for the evening. And I think I briefly saw you maybe the next morning, but everyone was kind of leaving the next morning.
I was just done. No, hanging with you, Jenny and Sarah, Sarah Sanchez, Jenny Butler as well, made it so much better.
It was fun. And I will say, I mean, I know that there are one of the fun things about that weekend is that they have, you know, like a handful, you know, like two or three minor league games, and they have, you know, the home run derby. And I think it's just one of those things where you can kind of pick and choose what you want to do. And I think going into the final game of the World Series, I was like, well, let's just see how this game goes. And if it was some sort of blowout, I may have, you know, toddled on over to the home run derby, but I just wanted to see what happened. And then it was just like, you couldn't leave, you know?
Oh yeah. You couldn't. And all right, Dusty got his ring. Okay.
Dusty got his ring. I know everyone was just like, well, it's good for Dusty. Like, I was like, you know, all right.
Well, this is enough about me and my, lack of enthusiasm for the Astros winning that game. Let's go to you. And where does Lauren Auerbach's story start? What were you doing when you were 8 years old, your dreams and aspirations?
What was I doing when I was eight? I was collecting a lot of baseball cards when I was eight. Like I was like, that was my thing. I was born in Omaha, Nebraska, but my family kind of quickly, I basically kind of grew up in Colorado from, you know, like 4 or 5 years old up until middle school. Mm-hmm. And then from middle school on, I grew up in Arizona, went to college there. But for like little Lauren is kind of in Colorado. And, you know, I think one of the things that was, like I loved collecting baseball. For some reason, I just loved baseball. That was just kind of innate. I don't really know where that came from, because no one in my family, kind of in my immediate family, I guess, was like big baseball fans. But I loved it. And Colorado didn't have I'm going to date myself here, but Colorado didn't have a professional baseball team then, right? So at the time, this was like in the, well, like if I was 10, kind of like in the late 80s, early 90s, I really mm-hmm. liked the Oakland Athletics because that was the time when you had like the Bash Brothers, right? So it was just like Jose Canseco, that was what little Lauren liked at the time because that's what was there. But I would, you know, to kind of go back to your question, I was a huge baseball card collector and, I would spend hours downstairs, like with my baseball cards, like organizing them. And I would buy Beckett's and I would just like go through and I'd stare at the back of baseball cards. And
oh, Beckett's. I had that monthly.
Yeah. I loved it. And I would check my cards off.
Because we would say that there would be like two columns, mm-hmm. the lowest and the highest. And I mm-hmm. always said that I had the highest. Right. It was like $3 for the premium card. Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. You always had the highest. Like, unless there was something that was really, really like dinged up, you always had the mint one. Right. Like,
hey, this is worth $3.
Yeah. This is definitely. And so I love doing that. And I don't know. I was a big kind of tomboy when I was younger and I played a bunch of sports. And, you know, I love baseball. And I think it's funny now just kind of looking at, like, I'm like, now I also just kind of sit and look at numbers, not necessarily on the back of baseball cards, but on my computer screen about baseball players, you know? But yeah, so I was doing that. There was a time where I wanted to be a vet, but I found out that I had allergies and I was allergic to animals. So I couldn't really pursue that.
Oh, that's sad. I'm sorry.
I know. That's all right. But yeah, and then I was always interested in politics and I ended up going to college and got a political degree. And but that's further down the line, I guess, since we're talking about little Lauren.
That's not little Lauren.
Yeah, we're still in little Lauren time.
I actually went to the first ever Colorado Rockies game.
I went to one. I went to like one of the first Colorado mm-hmm. games. And I got a hat. I still have it. And like Andres,
pin.
I have a hat. I have like a hat.
Okay.
And it was like Andres Galarraga signed it.
Oh,
Andres
wow.
Galarraga. Yeah. And so I was like so excited. This was like a big deal for me. I was like, oh, that was so great. But that is my, I caught one game before we left and went to Arizona and that was it. And I was really excited about that.
Great,
but I interrupted your Colorado Rockies
story.
No,
well, it's the big cat though. I mean,
right. Exactly. I was so excited.
There wasn't much to it. I just remember I got this little pin and I didn't care at the age of like 5 or something. Yeah. But mm-hmm. then I realized later, wait a second, I had a pin from the very first Colorado Rockies game.
That's cool.
I guess that's kind of cool. And then I went on eBay. And it was like, oh, it's $5. Never mind. It's not that cool.
but it's fine. Probably in mint condition. So,
oh, yeah,
you know,
right.
You can
that's fucking Colin Beckett. Oh, that was the funniest thing ever going through. And in like retrospect, that magazine is so mm-hmm. silly. It's not for kids. It's for like actual people. Like it's like stock reporting.
Do they still have, is it still around?
I don't
know.
I would imagine not. Like the craze was at its peak really, I think in the 90s. Yeah. I mean, maybe now they don't need to put out a magazine for it. They just have like something. Right. I don't know.
Yeah. But I was just very happy with a Beckett and mm-hmm. some baseball cards and, you know, it was like, like a binder. And I,
mine's right over here. Yeah. Okay. You can't see it right now. It's holding open the sound blanket so that I can have the AC running.
Oh, there you go.
It's very smart.
It serves a purpose.
None of the cards inside of it, right? But okay, do you remember like your best baseball card? The one I was like, oh yeah, that's the one.
I have so many at my parents' house. It's shelves and shelves worth of binders. And no, I don't. I would like to go back and get them from my parents' house. And I could totally like geek out and look through them if I did this, but I'm gonna have to do that at some point. But yeah.
Did you get a 1-in-1 or any of like the 1-in-10s?
Oh, like some of the, yeah, like the limited series.
Right.
God, I don't even know. I don't know. Nothing that stands like out where I'm like, yes, this is my card and this is what I did. I know I just have so many, Nick. I don't really know. And I need to sift through them at some point. It's my grandparents got me one year. It was the, I guess it was like the whole Topps set of like the Oakland Athletics, which I thought was really cool. But at the same time, I was always like, no, I'm going to collect a whole team's worth of baseball cards on my own. Right. Like I don't.
Right.
You know,
yeah. You wanted it felt like it was cheating just buying them.
Totally.
In.
I want to chase all the players and do this. And so then you end up with like really crazy, all these duplicates of guys. Right.
That's like the old pay to win. That's not
exactly.
Fair.
And I was like, that's not fun. Right. I appreciate this. I was like, I really like this, Grandma, Grandpa, but I also
help me cheat.
I know. I need to. I like unwrapping those. The
cards.
Smell
too. Oh gosh.
I know.
Oh,
yep.
That was something.
And
else.
That's what I feel like in like Willy Wonka. When they open the
the golden ticket
and they're looking for like I feel like that's how I was with baseball cards. But it's just like just any baseball card for me was fine.
I had two cards that were in any way special, and none of them were like 1 out of 1 or anything. But it was, there was one that was, I want to say like Metal Universe or something along those lines. Ooh, one of the crazy ones that had the weird on the sign.
Was it like shiny and perforated and like
almost
like a newfangled one? Okay.
It was, they had a series of maybe like 99 or 2000 or something where. They put the names and they put them on the sign. It had some these crazy colors, and, like big fonts. It was a whole thing in the 90s of like trying to look like everything was spelled with a Z, right?
Oh, right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I got one that instead of a normal like gold name or something, it was a foiled name, which is like a 1 out of 75 or something. I was like, guess the player that I got it for. Scott Spezio.
Oh, Scott Spezio.
The most valuable card you could have. So I had that, and then you know how like they're the major like the main sets, and then they have the weird offshoots inside the set sometimes where it's like they have like 20 cards that are of a special series of it, not an insert, but it's part of the main set, and they're always worth less than the main one. So for this one, this is actually Metal Universe. I was really into Metal Universe, I guess, from like 98. And it's that thing. It's like MLPD, which is, I don't even know what that PD is, but it's a precious metal gem, 1 out of 50. But because it's like that offshoot, it's so much worse. So like no one cares about this thing.
Were you really excited about this though?
Yes. I was like, oh my God, I have a number 35 out of 50. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, you got that one though?
Yeah.
It would have been better if it's a player we don't even know now than the Jeff Agnew version.
And I feel it's like with those ones, like the Scott Spezios, there were always like a couple more of the Scott Spezios rolling out there than like the really, really fancy ones of that set,
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's all I ever got. And I see people like an 8-year-old getting a 1 out of 1. I'm like, I've opened so many packs in my day. Mm-hmm. How did I never get anything like that? Yep. That's not fair.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the cards that would have either like a cut of like,
oh,
like
a jersey,
player,
or,
jersey
something?
Or a bat?
I love those. I never got one. I tried so many Upper Deck packs. And
I think I had a couple. I know I'm like talking about this card and say how much I like it, but I can't remember exactly everything. Like I said, I need to go through and I'll have to come back and update you, on that, because
I actually I did a stream during, I think, COVID, or maybe it was a year ago or so, where I had my camera above so people can see me open my binder. I hadn't checked this out for ages. Yeah. And I went through all of them. And I thought I had these like valuable cards. I ordered them as you do. The binder's in order of your best cards first, right? It was like the eighth page or something. And the bottom right corner of the binder was a Jimmy Rollins rookie. That is the best one I had. And I looked it up. It's like $15 of this entire thing, of this entire collection that I got. I mean, I have inserts. I have inserts that should be okay. But I don't think anyone cares about inserts anymore now.
Well, you know, it's in the eye of the beholder, Nick. I think I think it's like, I wouldn't trade. I know if I go back through these cards, I'm sure maybe there's a handful of like really like kind of valuable ones, maybe. But I do look back on the time and I'm just like, I loved it. And I'm sure most of these cards are just like 10 cents or whatever, if even. And you know, but it, you know, it's not really
at the time we thought we would be. Yeah.
Oh, I know. This is going to be, this is like the lottery ticket for like 8 year olds. I was like, I'm not going to have to work because I'm going to get some very rare rookie card and I am set for life.
I have this distinct memory of my mom owing me like $10. And we're in the comic book store. And I want to get like 2 packs of Dondris. And she's like, this is what you want to spend your $10 on?
It is.
Yes.
Yeah. Any spare money I had, I was like, Mom, can you take me? And I was always like, can you take me to the card store?
Yeah, right. I actually got to be on an episode of Reading Rainbow. Or at least they auditioned me. And they gave me like 6 packs to like, talk about as I opened them why I wanted this or why I was interested in it. And then they said, no, we're not going to use you, but here's 8 more. And I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. Like, this is like Christmas. 8 packs. Like, as a kid, opening 8 packs in a row is like, what?
Yeah.
I do like one at a time if I'm lucky. You know?
I would, and I would also would want to space it out a little bit. I know it's like you would get so excited, but I would never like blow through everything at once because I want to prolong that enjoyment, you know? Sure. Yeah. Well, that was my personal baseball card opening.
I respect you a ton for that. So, I mean, so when you were a kid then, was there a certain thing that like, all right, this is what I'm going to be when I grow up?
No, not outside of kind of that really short-lived, you know, I want to be a veterinarian sort of thing.
Right.
But that, no. And then I did get into, like, I like to read a lot. And I think this is weird to say as a kid, but I don't know when this was formed, but I really liked sports, animals. And then I was always like reading like biographies and stuff. So
I mean,
this
is what the normal three things are that every kid goes through.
You know, right? This is so common. This is so boring because this is so common. And at some point, like really early on, I really did like government and politics and all that.
That's cool.
So, yeah.
So like high school, were you okay? Good student, Lauren, got to get into college because I got to go in.
I was a pretty good student. Yeah. I mean, and I was a fairly like also good kind of quiet, like student, didn't really rock the boat, didn't really get in trouble. You know, honor student, that sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah. And I always like, I wanted to go on, and I did go on to a couple of like summer trips to Washington and do that. So I knew at some point that, I liked politics and all that stuff and I want to go to Washington and,
Is that where you are now?
I am currently living in Washington, D.C.
Look at you.
So, I don't have a political job, but I used to, but I don't have any more, but it's you can't really escape politics living in D.C. But I've been in D.C. for like 20 years. And I love it. So
it must have been right out of college then. You're just
immediately after college. I got a degree in political science from ASU and
they just took down Michigan in basketball.
Follow basketball.
Just understand that I'm really angry at you now. That's
okay. Fine. All right. Okay. Yeah. Should I continue on? Do we need to end this? Do we need to end this right now?
I don't know.
You know what? Are we on the fence?
This might be the right time to take a quick break.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When it comes to weight management, we tend to put our focus on what we eat. But Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. And that's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Try Noom today and see the results for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
And we're back. I've settled down. I'm good. I don't even know what basketball is. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. Laundry involved? I don't know.
I did follow basketball when I was younger a lot, but it was never really college basketball. It was professional basketball. And it was when I was growing up in Arizona and I was a big Phoenix Suns fan. And it was kind of during the day, like my basketball knowledge and history honestly stops probably in the late 90s.
So like Barkley and Marbury.
Yeah, Barkley, mm-hmm. like Marley, Kevin Johnson, that whole, that kind of era. And at the time, Jeff Hornacek used to play for the Suns and he lived down the street from me. And that was really exciting because I was on like my basketball team in middle school and I was little. So I was basically like a point guard. And I basically mm-hmm. never really went past the 3-point line. If I was open, they'd pass the ball to me and I could drain threes. Like this was the thing that I could do. Right. And the only thing I could do on a basketball court. But he lived down the street. And so like sometimes he would come over and play basketball with me. And I was super stoked about that.
Oh, that's really cool.
That was fun. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So sorry, I interrupted you. ASU, Poli Sci, you got your first job and you head off to DC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of my first jobs coming to DC was, I worked at a lobbying firm. And so it was like a legislative kind of assistant, I guess was the title. And I did that for a little bit, but then I went back to school. I went to get my master's in environmental politics and globalization. And so I had that job for a little bit, went to school. I went to London for that. So it was only like say a 3-year program versus a 4-year program. Mm-hmm. And so I did that and, then came back and worked at a media watchdog organization in DC, and was a researcher and wrote articles there. So.
Nice. Which one was your favorite?
Like my favorite job of those two. I liked working at the media organization because you could kind of research. This was like during, when was this? This was like 2004, 2003. And you were kind of assigned beats. Like it was basically an organization where you followed anything from radio, television, newspaper, the big fives. What we did was you combat conservative misinformation. So it was like a more kind of a liberal organization. And I got to learn a lot about politics and I like researching and I like writing. And so that was fun to me.
Nice.
For me. Yeah.
Was that your first job? The one you got after college?
That was the, no, it was when I was I guess it was like a legislative kind of assistant. And so at a lobbying firm, and they basically, it was for a law firm that was based out of the Pacific Northwest. And so at the time, a lot of their clients were ports And at the time, this was like right after September 11th. So there was a lot going on in terms of border security and Homeland Security was just getting started, and it just ports were kind of like a big deal. And so we kind of dealt with a lot of port related issues, which was good kind of experience, but it's not like I was like, yeah, ports, like,
right.
You know, so yeah, it was good experience, yeah, but you know,
that's everybody's jam. I just gotta go and check out those ports. But I mean, like in middle school, high school, did you have any sort of odd job that was like the first time you made money?
No, I babysat a lot is basically like how I kind of funded myself. I have two younger brothers also who were 8 and 9 years younger than me. And I basically was kind of, babysitting all of kind of like the neighborhood children, all the time from like day one. So and I loved it. It was easy. I loved it because I love kids. I could watch kids. I could also get my homework done. Like I could, you know, it was just great. I was like, this is the best job. You
know, I could see you with like three kids, you know, in your arms and then one on your hip and, you know.
Yeah, it's great. You can watch movies, like, and people were just like, okay. And it was weird because at the time, I know we've got lots of friends that have kids, and apparently, like, the babysitting industry now is like very expensive. And at the time when I was doing it, it was just, you know, it's like I could babysit for a night, get like $20 or something like that. Right. So this is great. And kind of had like a network of families that I worked with, and it was great. I liked it.
We had I remember this in my school, there was a book that like a little phone book for everybody in the school. Mm-hmm. There's a section that was just for the babysitters, like approved by the school kids that were babysitting.
How do you think you got that approval? You think you have to like go in and
you had to actually
like interview or something? Like
there was like a little, there was a course you had to do through the school.
Oh, well, that's a good idea.
And I think that's how it worked. And so my babysitters growing up are all like in high school, seniors and something like that. And I was like 8, 9 years old.
Yeah.
But yeah, babysitting, I mean, you're saying it's crazy expensive now. What is it, like $100 a night or something?
I don't know. It's like sometimes, you know, when we kind of like go out like pre-COVID a bunch, it was just like, oh my God, we got to like pay the babysitter. It's going to be like at least, you know, like $60 depending on what you're doing. I was like, man, that's like,
that's
I would also be
out.
Like, that's a good gig though. Like, you know? It's like, I will sit and happily watch some children for a couple hours.
Right.
And you can give me at least $60 to do it. Sure. And
especially when they're super young, it's like half of the time is literally them in bed.
Yeah. So after that, like 8 p.m., you know, which is, I feel like a universal child bedtime is 8 p.m. And so it's like you put them in bed and then do whatever you want, you know?
Watch TV, I babysat a few times. There was a teacher and her and nephew. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, I was like, yeah, I can do. She like thought of me to do it. I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do that. I guess I'm going to admit this. It's like the I'm such a noob when it comes to babysitting. I mean, at least like when I was like 16 or something. I remember a moment where he was napping and he wanted me to for him to like go to sleep, he wanted me to like be on the floor and like there in the room to go to sleep. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I totally like accidentally fell asleep for like a good five minutes. Uh-huh. And I hope it was 5 minutes. I don't even know. Mm-hmm. We didn't have phones or like, you know, at the time or something. I couldn't like check exactly how long
check the sun.
Was.
You look out the window. You
know, right. And I just remember feeling like I am the worst babysitter ever. I mean, he was fast asleep. Like there was nothing. There was no problem or anything like that.
Yeah.
I was just like, I don't think I can handle the anxiety of doing this anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm out of
You're
the babysitter
out.
Business.
You're out. That was it. I fell asleep on the floor once and I am donezo.
No, I'm so gone. I'm like, oh God. Like, just
well,
felt
how old was the child?
No, he was like 8.
Oh, okay.
You know, I helped him with his homework. I did that, you know, he was a wonderful kid, you know?
Yeah.
Just, I was like, I can't do this. I don't know how you, it is wild to me actually. Just, yeah. I don't know. How old were you doing this? 14, 15?
Oh my God. No, I would say early. Like it was very early. like probably like 11, 12, 13
yeah, that's
on.
So yeah. Much responsibility.
I know, but I don't know. I don't know if you always say things were different then. I don't know. Like, but I was kind of like an older child, I guess, where, like I said, my brothers are a year apart. And so I really kind of watched my middle brother a lot while my youngest brother, like my parents were tending to the, you know, my youngest brother. And so I was kind of a built-in babysitter, and I had that early on from like age nine. So it was just easy for me to do.
You had it. Yeah. It was there for you.
Yeah.
But even as a parent, just saying, yeah, this 12-year-old seems good enough.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, that's crazy. You know? Yeah, we're gonna bring the 12 over. We're gonna go see a movie. We're gonna go out date night, and we're gonna bring a 12 year old over. You know, watch the kids.
I mean, I'm talking like this with somebody without kids or anything. So
yeah, the same. But
what
yeah,
do I know? Uh-huh. What do I know, Lauren?
Well, you tell me, Rick.
So let's progress through this. And actually, I want you to. I think you have a very interesting perspective. We haven't had anyone on the show that has worked in politics. For anybody listening that is interested to jump into it, is there a piece of advice that you've learned over your years in the business that you'd want to tell yourself just entering it?
Well, and I would say that this kind of actually applies to lots of things, but you know, kind of the power of networking, you know, and just kind of being open to you know, meeting, especially, you know, I think nowadays where I think that politics has, you know, become very, can be very divisive. I think that, you know, don't kind of always kind of like keep an open mind. At the end of the day, we are all just people, and people, no one has a correct perspective. We all come from different backgrounds. And I think that, being able to be open to that is a very good and powerful thing. And again, I don't think that this just applies to politics, but
right.
I think that that's always kind of a good thing. But yeah, that combined with networking, you never really know, you know, where your experiences are going to come from. So I think you kind of always need to kind of keep that in mind. And if there's something that you're really passionate about, whether it's a specific issue, you know, definitely try and volunteer or figure out organizations that are of interest to you and that you would like, and see what's out there. You know, I mean, you won't know unless you go out and try things.
Yeah,
and
you gotta ask questions, right?
Yeah,
yeah. That kind of reminds me of something Justin Mason, the wise Justin Mason, told me.
Wise Mason.
He says, "You never know who's going to be your boss," which I thought was interesting. I was like, "Yeah, that is actually really smart." I don't know.
Yeah.
If that's what you need to, I'll put it, just be nice to people in the first place, of course.
Right.
But yeah, networking is, I hate how important it is.
Me too. I am not like, I say that, and I think part of that is a thing, like why I would say network. It's something that I don't really like to do. Mm-hmm. And, I think that there are certain people that are really good at it, but I think that you do kind of, you have to do it to a certain extent. I'm not comfortable all the time doing that. I never really was, but I think it's something that's really valuable. So.
The idea of what networking is to a lot of people, at least it was for me for a while until I realized more so what it is, but there's this perception that networking is schmoozing and being fake and disingenuous, and it's not. Networking is literally just having a conversation with someone you haven't had before.
Right.
That's it. If you don't like them, you don't have to keep talking to them.
Right. I think that's true. And I think that, you know, in terms of politics, if there's, like I said, kind of an issue or something that you're really interested in or feel strongly for and want to be an advocate I think that also makes it easier. It's kind of like, say, you know, when you were talking about First Pitch Arizona earlier, where it's like, in a way that was easy because you knew everyone there, you were interested in one thing that you really like, and everyone here is interested in that. And so it's very easy when you find that to kind of fall into conversations. And in a way, whether you think you're necessarily networking or not, if you think you're just having a conversation with someone, you never know, like down the line, if they're like, hey, you know, I'd like to have you come on my podcast or, you know, whatever, you know, you never know what's going to kind of come out.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is great. Yeah. Good piece of advice, Lauren.
Thank you.
But yeah, it's a, Yeah, another way to think of it is it's not even standing around with a beer in your hand or something mm-hmm. like that, or a cocktail. It's also saying yes to random things. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had certain opportunities that I wouldn't have had if I didn't say yes to this one person who then said, hey, you want to come on to this? And I said yes. Mm-hmm. And then through that, I know someone else that they gave me the opportunity that I'm looking
right.
for, right?
Yeah.
And that's networking. It's not yeah. just going to a giant party.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all a process. There's always a story to right. where you get to something that involves you meeting somebody. Mm-hmm. That from there, it's a node that goes to something else.
Yeah. And I think it's true when you do that too, you need to be, you need to kind of present like your true self as well. You have yeah. to be authentic.
Can't be
and
disingenuous.
I think exactly. don't, yeah, don't try and say things that you think someone else wants to hear,
right.
Because that really doesn't do you any favors down the line. Be your authentic self, and people either are like thumbs up, thumbs down, I don't know. But all you can do is the best thing you can do is be yourself. You know?
Right. Yeah. One step further on that, I'd say is, you can fake it so that you make it works. Mm-hmm. Which is shocking, and it's mm-hmm. annoying too. Another one that's annoying that is true.
Yeah,
yeah. But yeah, you have these opportunities. I call it the stumble rule, which is if you're like walking up the street and you stumble and then you turn the corner, nobody there knows that you just stumbled.
Mm-hmm.
So with everything that you do, you can keep redefining yourself as much as you want,
mm-hmm.
as long as
mm-hmm.
it's something that you generally want to be, as opposed to wearing a mask to take off later.
Right.
So with a lot of this stuff, if it's a new opportunity for you to define what you want to be,
mm-hmm.
And don't make it something that they want you to be something that
right.
you want to be.
Right. Because at the end of the day, what are you doing? Like trying
right.
to make someone else, you know, fit in some sort of mold or make someone else's vision
right.
come true versus like your own. Because at the end of the day, that you're not, that's can be very hollow and you're not going to like that.
No, you're not. That's great as well. So that aside, you do stuff in baseball media now. This is awesome.
I do.
Tell us how you got into this.
I feel like I still am a kind of a newbie in this. When did this start? This started in probably 2001.
You're a newbie starting in 2001.
Yes.
Lauren.
Yes.
Please.
Wait, 2021. Sorry. So yeah, I've been doing this 20 years. I feel like
I'm just like a noob.
2021. Thank you for catching that, Nick. That was a very large time gap there. So yes, 2021. One of my friend, but at the time was kind of like a coworker at that media organization, we would always find ourselves in the office talking about sports and or like at, you know, little organizational gatherings or whatever, and we'd always talk about sports. And he ended up he came to me kind of in 2020, at the end of 2020, and was like, I'm thinking of doing a sports podcast. Like whenever we saw each other, we're like, we should do a sports podcast, you know? And you always say it and it's like, great. Yeah. You know, and then you leave and you never really do anything about it. And so he's like, I'm actually thinking, this is kind of after COVID. And so kind of the world had kind of gone on pause a little bit. And he's like, I'm actually, you know, now thinking of doing a podcast. would you be interested in kind of doing this with me? I was like, sure. Even though neither of us kind of knew what we were doing or how to go about this. But we basically kind of came up with this idea of like rest of season rankings. And it was, we had like a podcast that we did, and we had like this website, and we would, this for baseball and football, but we would kind of do these, basically notes on all these players, rank them once a week, do kind of write a little article on the website. And then we would also try and do podcasts like twice a week if we could. And it took a long time to get this started, primarily because the website took forever, right?
Yeah, that can be such a...
yeah, that was... We wanted to be ready for like the I guess the 20... wait, 2021. Am I off on a year? I might be. Yeah, the 2021 season. Okay. But the website kind of really pushed us back and we weren't really ready until like mid season. So basically we ended up doing a handful of episodes and Matt Williams had sent out a tweet. We had done 5 episodes at this time. And Matt Williams sent out a tweet saying, "Hey, any new content, people, send me your stuff. I will look at it. And, you know, if I like your stuff, I'll give you feedback." And so Andrew had sent, like my friend Andrew had sent a copy of our podcast, and Matt got in touch and was like, "I'd like this. Do you guys want to come on my show?" And so we're like, "Yeah, great." And so we went on Matt Williams's show, and a couple of days after that, Matt got in touch with me and was like, "Hey, I know a friend of mine is looking for a co-host for a baseball show. I recommended you. I hope you don't mind. He's probably going to get in touch with you." And that was Michael Simeone. And so, so I ended up kind of co-hosting with Michael Simeone over at SP Streamer. And then a couple weeks after that, you know, Eric Cross got in touch and was like, "I like you on the podcast. Do you also write?" Excuse me. And I was like, "I haven't written a ton. I've written a little bit." And he's like, "Do you want to try it?" And so I was like, "Sure." And so then I was writing over at Fantrax. And so I've, this past season was like my first full season. So I've kind of been doing this for like a season and a half. And I, like I said, that's where I still feel like I'm trying to get my sea legs under me in terms of, you know, I've learned a lot in a really short amount of time and still feel like I'm still learning. And but it's been great. I've met like lots of great people. But I mean, it started was just kind
I'm
of
still
doing
learning
that
now and, so yeah. much. Every single yeah. time I go to first pitch, every time I read anything else, I'm like, "Oh, right. Hitters are a thing." No, but that's really cool. I mean, that's kind of how it can happen. You know, if you put yourself out there and you get opportunities and you say yes to them and then one thing leads to another, right?
Yeah. And like I said, it's happened really quickly. And I still feel like I'm trying to catch up, but doing the best I can and I'm kind of learning like every day. And but yeah, it's been fun. Like I said, you know, kind of going back to that little Lauren of looking at those baseball cards and looking at numbers, and now bigger, older Lauren is kind of doing that. And that's fun too. So yeah, I love it. It's been fun.
That's really cool. I wonder if Fangraphs ever goes to a model where you have to purchase the player page onto a baseball card and you have to wait a week until you actually get to read the player page on the back of a card.
That'd be fun, right?
Yeah. Maybe we'll consider that model here. No. So how was your first year? I mean, what was the regular schedule for you?
I liked it. I mean, I was doing, I think one or two articles. I think I was doing just one article a week for Fantrax. And then one podcast with Michael. It was fun. I mean, at first when I was at Fantrax, because I didn't know, I came into it at the end of the year and I didn't really know, like Eric's like, "What do you want to write about it?" And I was like, "I'll write about anything." And because I do like anything, but that also is not very helpful. He's like, "I know, but what do you want to write about?" And I was like, "I don't know." And it was tough for me coming into at the end of the season, because it was also like everyone already had kind of their writing assignments, whether it was waiver wire or like, you know,
two-star pitchers.
Everything. Like it was all like already figured out. And so it was tough to, one, I never had done this before. And then two, how do you fit in there? And like, well, a lot of stuff is already covered. And so I think in that first season, I had just done like maybe 4 or 5 articles, and they were essentially kind of like, you know, underperformers and overperformers. And then in that first full season, I was doing kind of essentially the same thing, like looking at guys who are either underperforming that you should, guys who are overperforming or underperforming. And it was under like a thing called like hot and cold streaks. So I was looking at streaking players. And so I did that. It was good. I would continue doing that. I like that. I haven't figured out what my assignment's going to be, what I want to do this season. But I don't know. I that was good. I've enjoyed it, and yeah. I may do more articles than just kind of once a week. You know, like I said, it's tough sometimes. Like right now, it's kind of an overlap between like football and baseball for me. But
we all know what the solution is here, Lauren.
I know. Get rid of football, right?
Yeah, come on. Especially December. I mean, it is really.
I know, but it's like playoffs just started. Now is like no. when you know.
I know this. I know. We have QB lists. I know how it works.
You're aware of something.
August, September, October is like huge for fantasy football. Then it starts, I don't know, November. Everyone's like,
baseball's now just starting to kick up.
December is like, oh, I'm not going to make the playoffs. I don't really care. You know, it's how it is.
You do. You know what's going on.
Oh, I know from the business side.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I did make it. I did make it in the Legacy League for QB list staff, which is just so funny to me. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've missed the playoffs once in 4 or 5 years. Maybe I did one. I'm sure I did 1 year.
Wow.
I know. Well, I think it proves not me, but the quality of the game itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, if you flip a coin 5 times, you know, sometimes there'll be 4 of them, you know? Four heads, you know, right? Uh-huh. Totally. I think it's actually really interesting because I want to dive into this a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I don't often get the perspective of someone, you've just been in the game kind of for like a year and a half now. Mm-hmm. You just had your full season of it. Mm-hmm. For me, I have this down by the book schedule now, right? Mm-hmm. I have, all right, at night, I'm writing the SP roundup. And then the next morning, I'm doing a Twitch thing where I do this and I do that. And then I have my free time like in the middle of the day where I still work mm-hmm. most of the time. Mm-hmm. And then I have this podcast, then, and then so on and so forth, right? And I do that and that's it. I have my lovely new keyboard. I have my two monitors. I mm-hmm. listen to music, which is actually just Toto on repeat for the SP roundup. I'm not nice. It's mm-hmm. not a joke. The mm-hmm. developer in the code put Toto by Africa by Toto.
Yeah.
When I press give me the roundup stats, it starts playing on repeat.
Now, do you ever get tired of that though?
No, it's a vibe. It's like a setting. It's like just I'm at work and it's just there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm typing and I go, oh man, it's already the instrumental bridge. Okay, fine. All right, got it. Oh, I got to go again. Oh my God. Running out of time. But I have that's built in for me. But someone just jumping in, did you struggle to find that sort of schedule for yourself? Mm-hmm. Are you still fine trying to figure out exactly what that is?
Yeah, still figuring out a little bit. I mean, it's easy. Like I said, like right now I'm primarily doing football. That's a really easy set schedule where, mm-hmm. Where, you know, kind of start on Sunday, you've got the games. I'm researching on, you know, Monday and writing on Monday, finishing up on Tuesday, turning stuff in on Tuesday for like a Wednesday. You know, when it's out in the world there, that's like my deadline for that. And then I also have to, I do a couple other little football stuff, like bold predictions over there. So basically a Sunday to Wednesday is kind of like football. And now that we're mm-hmm. kind of transitioning over, we've got, you know, off season in baseball. Now that's just kind of, kind of also doing like baseball research and stuff. But when I was doing it, kind of that first season, it helped that, everything was set. Like it was like doing Tuesdays with Michael Simeone, you know, that was set. Mm-hmm. And then having those set deadlines, and I would have to work around it because I'd have to also work around it like with work and then kind of figure out stuff. But you do it. I feel like when you have more crunched time, it's like you can figure that out rather than if you do have free space. Sometimes I think it's like that's better, but it's not really for me at least, because then it's just like you either procrastinate or you don't really, it's just like, I found that if I had lots of deadlines, that was actually more helpful because then it was like you had to really like focus and be like, okay, Arbok, let's just do like, you got to hammer this out. This has to get in and, you know, has to be submitted by X time. And so I actually found when there was more things on the docket that helped me. And I with this first season, I actually pulled back and said I was only going to do one article a week. And I think I could definitely like kind of do a couple. And I think that would help me kind of just focus time.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So like going into this season, you know, Eric, like, you know, Eric's always great. And he's just like, you can write as little or as not little as you want, like, or as much as you want. little or not little.
I liked it, though. That was fine.
I was like, little or not little. You know, everyone, that makes sense.
Everyone always goes for the large, but no, you're going to say the little man.
Little or not little.
More. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I minimize everything. But I think I may try and double it up a little bit and see how that goes. I don't know. All did right. that really answer? I feel like I rambled on that one a little
That's
bit.
That's okay. That's what I do all the time. And it works.
Okay. All right.
Maybe. No. Uh-huh. Is there a, like, okay. So are you listening to music when you write?
I can listen to music, but I can't listen to music. I do, but I can't listen to music that has lyrics because otherwise I'll listen mm-hmm. to the lyrics more than focusing on what I need to do. So then my music when I work ranges anything from say like a classical and a jazz to just kind of like a chill thing, a lo-fi like some thing. Sort of mix. Yeah. Where it's just like,
yeah.
it's like if you're sitting like in like, I don't know, like a coffee shop or something. Where
yeah, sure.
Yeah.
My Twitch stream ruined my Spotify Wrapped because I had to play like lo-fi stream beats the yeah. entire time for every stream. So it's like, oh, hey, you really like lo-fi by Harris Ellis. I'm like, I know. Yeah. But that's not me. That's just around me.
Yeah.
that's not my preference.
But that is like, I can't work with lyrics because then yeah. I will just be keyed in on that.
Yeah, I'm weird. I don't care for lyrics. I call it the 5% mm-hmm. rule. Where 5% of the time the lyrics of a song will make me either like or dislike it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just all like I vocals themselves, their mm-hmm. melodies and how they sound is important. But the actual words, the poetry of it, maybe in retrospect, I'll read at it. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Okay. But
yeah.
I mean, that's not the music. That's not, I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's not for me. But I know I'm weird. I'm the weird one here.
Kind of weird.
I get it. Well, it's minority, which is weird okay. to me. But I guess like you addressed one of the problems that you had coming into saying, well, what do you want to write about? And you're like, mm-hmm. I don't know. And he said, mm-hmm. well, you can write about anything. He said, I know that, but I still can't decide. Mm-hmm. And did you find a solution for that?
So when I did like my hot and cold streaks, I like that because that's just essentially kind of like a buy high, buy low, sell high sort of right. thing. I do like doing that. I also like, it's really easy. Like I like to do like waiver wire-y stuff, but Eric Cross, he's in charge of, you know, the waiver thing. That's not coming down to me.
Bringing us all down.
You know, because I do, I like that because it's just like, you can kind of, it's like you're just analyzing players that are maybe under the radar and mm-hmm. aren't maybe out there. And I like looking at kind of, you know, underlying metrics and then what that means for players. I don't know. So that also is not really an exact subject. So I don't know. No, I haven't like customized it to what okay. I actually really.
Well, this kind of leads into a question I mm-hmm. ask a lot of people is, so here you are now. You have this fun situation with Fantrax. What do you see for yourself moving forward? What do you want to be doing inside the industry?
I think I like to write. I also like going on podcasts. And now, you know, when I was doing stuff with Michael, that's no longer since he kind of shut SP Streamer down. He's over at GTE. And so I miss that. I think that I like writing, but it's also very time consuming. Whereas mm-hmm. I think it's also, you do have to prep for podcasts, but you can kind of get through a lot. And it's kind of fun to interact with people, I think. But I did like having that combo. And right now I just kind of have the writing. So I guess maybe in the future I would like to do a little bit of both.
Sure.
And I don't know really exactly in what kind of like format. I don't know. I like doing both of those things. Mm-hmm. So,
But that's okay. So to me, it sounds like I just want to write once a week and podcast once a week and then that's it. You're set. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think, I mean, ideally it would be great if you could just kind of, if you could have this as like your full-time.
Yeah. Would you want that? I mean, it sounds like you've been in the political space for many years.
Yeah. I mean, I like it because it's one of those things. It's like, you just get to kind of do something that you like to do for fun. And then, mm-hmm. If you could do that, like all the time, that's great. Right.
Yeah. Sure.
And so, I don't know, like I said, I feel like because I am kind of new, I don't really have, I don't have like a set plan right now. I don't know yet.
And well, yeah, a plan is, you know, a plan is something you create when you know the thing you want, right? And mm-hmm. the finding the thing you want is always a challenge. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing I want always changes. So I tell that to my developers.
but I mean, like when you started, was it just like, okay, this is what I'm doing. I know how I'm going to go about it.
Yeah. No. I mean, yes and no. Like mm-hmm. I knew, okay, I wanted the GIF database. I wanted that to exist. Mm-hmm. And then they shut it down. Yeah. So, and I was like, fine. I enjoyed the writing. So I wanted mm-hmm. to do a couple articles of this and that. And I think when I started doing the writing, I was surprised at the response to it because I was one of the few that actually included GIFs inside of articles at the time. Mm. And I started to kind of understand the gaps in content on the internet with it because it was mm-hmm. still kind of ruled by people who had done like newspaper stuff, who knew the proper mm-hmm. realms of journalism.
Yeah.
And as we've seen over the past 8-10 years, content has shifted dramatically. We mm-hmm. haven't jumped so much into the video realm as much as, but we did get into podcasting in 2016. I think the style we have on PictureList, we've been lucky that it fits with a broader audience, I think. Just because we're like, hey, very relaxed. Like I don't make them do APA formatting, right. all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I saw the pieces a little bit. I mean, what we do now with like how large the site is and all of this, mm-hmm. It just keeps every year there's like an assessment and a reflection of like, what can we accomplish in the next year? That's a fun goal. Let me try and do mm-hmm. that. I mean, now I have like all these grandiose plans. How wonderful would it be to do all these extra things at some point? But, you know, step by step from there. But yeah, when I first started this, it was just, can this work? Can I just get people on the site to view GIFs? That'd be great. Mm-hmm. And then go from there.
Yeah.
So just, yeah, you need that first, I guess, flag planted and then stake in the ground to pull you up until you get to the peak, then you can see where you are. I don't know. I'm gonna stop being
is that a phrase?
Sure. Why not? You know?
It's a great one. Okay. Yeah.
Gonna change the topic completely here to something mm-hmm. that's gonna seemingly be very random, and I apologize in advance. Were you in the 90s, were you at all involved with the Pokemon craze?
No, my brothers were though, so I know a little bit about it.
So they must have enjoyed that there was a Pokemon named Arbok.
I'm unaware of a Pokemon named Arbok.
It's Cobra
backwards. Is it spelled like my name too?
No, it's Cobra backwards.
Oh, okay.
But you call yourself, I incorrectly said Auerbach before, mm-hmm. and you said mm-hmm. Arbok.
Mm, this is a weird thing about my family. So it's
you guys,
even
you
within,
can't decide?
Within the family. Within the family, there is like my aunt's side. Their pronunciation of our last name is Arbaugh, and my dad was like, "No, we are not Arbaughs. We are Auerbachs."
Yeah, but then you're in the DC area with the Arbaughs, you know.
And I think my dad was like horrified by this concept. He's like, "We are not the Arbaughs. We are the Auerbachs." But then it's also like, everyone's like, you know, Arbok, like so it's between Arbok and Auerbach, but in my family, we are more the Bach,
a third
like the
party.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And then, but we are in no way the Arbaughs.
Okay. Get that one out of here. We are our own boss, not our boss.
Yes.
Okay.
No. And I'm like, that's like crazy that even like two siblings are like, you can't have the same last name, like the pronunciation.
That's so
but that
fun.
Whole side of my family, it's the Arbaugh.
Okay. So for mm-hmm. you though, it's Arbok.
Arbok, yeah.
Okay, good. Noted, moving forward. No, mm-hmm. Never is it our.
Sometimes it's our, but like I get that and that's fine, but generally I'm like, it's Arbok.
It's Arbok. It's Arbok. Yeah. Well, it's good to know, everybody. Yeah. This is Lauren Arbok, just so you know. Yep. I had a whole thing about gold too with Auerbach, and I can't do that now.
Well, but I will say, like, with my Twitter handle, it's like LK, and I will say LK Auerbach because I feel like LK Arbok, like that's
they won't be able to find you on Twitter.
Yeah, it's harder to Like, what is that?
Names. LKR, what is this?
Like, see, so I do use both Arbach and Auerbach, but never Arbach.
Yeah. No, never Arbach.
Never Arbach.
Man. Well, that is something I did not expect, and that's wonderful. I'm gonna ask a question I ask everybody, because we're getting close to the hour, and I've already taken so much of your time, and it's been lovely having you here.
Yes, it's been lovely chatting.
Do you have a mantra that you live your life by?
I don't. There's not like one thing where I'm like, yes, this is how. Well, maybe my mantra is not Arbach.
No. Never Arbach.
That's my mantra. Never Arbach. No, I think no, I don't have like a set one, but I was referred to this like the other day, like this idea of don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, which I know is like,
no,
you know,
that's a
good one. Like, to me, it's just like, and I find that when I'm like writing, or if I get stuck on writing, you can do, like, I apply it really in anywhere in my life, that you know, don't get kind of tied up on being perfect. Like, we're like, what's the point there? You know, I think that, you know, if you're not perfect, that's how you grow and that's how you learn, and don't stop being perfect. Don't prevent you from whatever it is you're doing, you know, whether it is writing an article or, you know, doing whatever you are doing in your life. I think that it can be applied anywhere. So I do kind of go around with that a little bit.
Oh, man, that's a very good one. Anytime you're starting a new project or something like that, especially on the internet, I certainly have gotten to the point of it needs to be perfect. I'm talking to developers about little things here and there. And
it's like, just kind of throw stuff out there, and it doesn't have to be perfect. And if it, you know, if it speaks to someone, then great. And if you need to reshape and mold and do whatever to figure out whatever it is, but don't stop doing something because you can't do it.
There's an perfectly. Idea that you only get one shot kind of be give a first impression. And I definitely lean into that too much at times. Still, with the internet, like, you have so many opportunities. The stumble rule certainly applies. So people have discovered
Would that be yours?
In the last year, you know.
Yeah.
I have five that I live by.
Oh, okay.
The fifth one is funny. The four of them are what are they? No. I know your audience. Everything in moderation, but there are always exceptions. There are always exceptions is the third one. steps, not leaps. For anything that you do, you gotta take steps, and you gotta take steps with other people. You can't expect them to take leaps.
Right.
And the fifth one is don't suck.
Just don't need to be perfect.
Just don't suck.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's true. And I would say that actually one of your steps reminds me of actually another thing that I do. It's called like bird by bird, where it's just that you take like, it's like little, it's just, it's essentially like the same concept, but it came from a really great book by Anne Lamott. It's called Bird by Bird. And it's like, if you ever feel kind of like overwhelmed about something, just take it like step by step, bird by bird. That's like all she got to do. And then it becomes easier with kind of each next.
Once you see the steps, it's so much easier to grasp the goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. But then you realize, like, I know it takes steps, but I don't want to run 10 miles. I see the steps. I get it. And I don't care.
You're like, I'm not doing this. Don't want to do it.
No. So far, I can't even, like, actually see it.
Yeah.
Oh, but no.
It'll be tough.
And last questions. I realized I didn't ask these. I normally do. Are you more of a film person, TV person? I mean, I think you were saying book person, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a big reader. I feel like my movies and stuff kind of like dropped off a little bit. I really like old movies.
Opposite everyone after COVID.
What's that?
Opposite of everyone from COVID.
See, right?
Yeah.
I love like old classic movies. Like from like the cable days, where it was just like you had TCM, and so just kind of like films of like the 40s and all that stuff and 50s. Sure. Like, I love stuff like that. But yeah, big kind of book person, and I tend to be a little bit more nonfiction than fiction, like biographies and so yeah.
So we have the holidays coming. Is there one that you would highly recommend?
I really like what's it called? It's good. I know
That good, huh?
No. Because it's about God.
I believe in you. I believe in you so much right now.
What's it like? Seriously, I'm looking over at my bookshelf right now, but I've already loaned this
title
book
I've
out.
Ever heard of a book.
Just. No, well, now I can't. Like, whatever I say.
None of them. So anyway, go off to your stores. You can use promo code PITCHERLIST to get that book that is in Lauren's head that she does not
want
to share.
Seriously, I want, like, what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to, I just, like, gave it to my brother.
What's the cover?
It's a Candace Millard book. It's about President Garfield, but it also talks about it's like his assassination, but it also ties into kind of what was going on in society at that time, like in
that
science
led
and all
to
this
it
stuff.
And why it wasn't just a random assassination. It was step
and
by
like
step.
Why he ultimately like he had died essentially because you know the U.S. didn't really take kind of seriously like some science-based bacteria junk. I am not selling this. I can't even remember
spoiler
the name, but this is really
good. Come on, spoiler alert. Unbelievable. I was going to be on the edge of my seat the entire time, but now I'm just in the firm back of it. Oh. All right. I think that's a good time to stop as you are going to shout the name of the book.
Destiny of the Republic.
Perfect timing, Lauren. Destiny of the Republic. You heard it here first. The most recommended book for this holiday season by
I totally sold
Lauren
it.
Yep. Arbach. I'm sorry, Lauren Arbach. But that I think that's going to conclude this episode. And before we leave, Lauren, please tell everybody what you do and where they can find you.
I write baseball and football articles over at FanTrax, so you can find me over there. And my Twitter handle is LK Auerbach.
There you go. Definitely give Lauren Arbach a follow. But that's going to do it for today. So my name is Nick Pollock, and that was my friend, Lauren Arbach.